Welcome to the Best Hour of Their Day podcast with your hosts, Jason Fernandez.
And me, Jason Ackerman. With more than 20 years in the business,
as both coaches and affiliate owners,
our passion is to help create world-class affiliates
and coaches by building
better
boxes.
Welcome to
the Best Hour of Your Day.
All right, Fern, today we're going to talk all about the specific warm-up. Perhaps for many coaches, the most challenging aspect of coaching an effective class. So let's start right here. Why the specific warm-up? What's the point?
Well, let's go back, right? So
back to the general warm-up?
Just back in time, generally.
Before we met, before we started recording the podcast?
I want to start this whole thing from scratch.
With a different partner?
Yes. The name is obviously... makes it obvious what it is for, specific to that workout that you're doing today. But why would anybody care? Let's go with that, right? Why would anybody?
What I asked you, why do we have to go back in time? That's literally the question I asked you.
No, you said, why is it important? Which is different than why would anybody care? There's a difference between
why. Difference?
Yeah, for sure. Because it's, a level of importance to the coach for their own intrinsic value, meaning like progressing as a person, as a professional. The other one is important to the class.
Okay.
So,
agree to disagree.
Well, either way, I'm right, so it doesn't matter. This is a hang up for a lot of people, particularly going through the level two, for sure going through the level four. This is a major hang up for people because this structure and this, the ability to coach both technically and concisely, becomes very problematic for people. Meaning, hey, you have, call it 8 minutes allotted in your lesson plan to teach the snatch progression, and people just fundamentally struggle to utilize that as effectively as is possible, given that you would only have 8 minutes in a given timeline.
Meaning the snatch is perhaps the most complex move we do in CrossFit, right? It's an Olympic weightlifting
Correct.
Move. And what you're suggesting is, because it's so complex, newer or more novice coaches struggle to do it in 8 minutes because they want to overcoach or teach everything rather than a specific few parts.
I wouldn't even limit it to newer or novice coaches. I would just limit it to coaches broadly, right? Meaning like, I've got 8 minutes to take people through one of the more complex things that we're going to do. And we have to put aside like whether we all think that's enough time, because I would think we would all agree it's not, depending on what it is that we're trying to achieve. But I still have to do my best. I still have to optimize that 8 minutes, whatever it is. So if you are looking to progress your skill set from a credential standpoint, then this is really important. But also just understanding that, you and I have spent a lot of time with affiliate owners in the past couple of weeks, and people notice this and they may not even know why. When you come into the class, like the number of times I had like, oh, the coach is like, they really coached. They thoroughly covered the thing, right? That shocks people, which is really problematic if we're talking about coaches in the CrossFit space. Like that should not shock people.
It should be the norm.
Should be the norm. And it is not, right? So all of this wraps into, if in fact we are going to say we have great coaches, and if in fact we are going to really lean on this idea of being a professional coach, like the specific warmup becomes an integral part of that. Like if you were to go into a college or professional strength and conditioning program and you were unable to do some of these basic skill sets, you would never get a job ever. Hell, you might not get a job in the high school setting, but high school setting is really sloppy.
Well, agreed. And I think, look, the general warm-up, you can have a great one, you can have a bad one, but as a whole, it's relatively easy. Like
right.
jumping jacks, some squats, like it's relatively simple. And then the workout, again, you could have great, but it can be as simple as 3, 2, 1, go, depending on how much you're coaching throughout the workout. the specific warm-up is really, as a coach, you know, where the bread is buttered, where you make your money, because this is the portion of class where members learn new skills, move better, you know, make progress. Like, this is really where, this is perhaps the most important part of class.
I had a member who dropped in at a gym recently, like within the past week, and it was and she was explaining this, and this member is a very experienced CrossFitter for probably 10 years, most of which is at my gym. And she was talking about, she went to the gym and she was like, it was fine, right? Like, it was there was nothing crazy going on there. But what she highlighted is something to consider, and it has nothing to do with the format, meaning like strength plus Metcon. It just has to do with what is almost a requisite omission in that format, just due to time. And she was like, strength plus Metcon is great, but she was like, I could not imagine being a new person in that class and having to learn or appropriately keep up in that setting. And I was like, that's a good point. Like, we always think of it from a coaching standpoint, but like thinking of it from a new person standpoint, be like, all right, guys, we're going to work up to a heavy back squat, and then we're going to do this. And like, and it's your third day. You're like, holy shit, man. So,
right. You know, we talked about it a lot at our mastermind, but even the best onboardings, and we've got, you know, our 4-part series that has already dropped, is not about teaching members all the movements they're going to do. Because say someone, like the movement you say, snatch, it's like, oh, say we cover snatch in session 2 of onboarding, you know, and then the person comes in 3 times next week, misses Amanda, misses a heavy snatch. Now it's been a month and they're like, what are we doing? We're doing it. Well, this Olympic lift that I learned for 8 minutes 4 weeks ago, like,
right.
We need to be refreshing that. We need to be refining it.
So if we think on a longer time frame, the specific warm-up is to continue to refine mechanics over a longer period of time. Meaning like, hey, no, you can't teach the snatch, you know, effectively in 8 minutes, but done 57 times over 8 minutes this year, you could make some serious gains.
Do that math, 57 times 8. That's like 456.
I don't know if that's correct, but I'll assume that you are accurate on that. But the point is like, that's
456 minutes dedicated to that movement. Like, and I know you're kind of throwing numbers out there, but even if it was,
or otherwise stated, 7 hours, right? Like,
but, that's, but even if it was 2 hours, it's like, it's 2 hours versus 0 minutes of, because we're going to snatch, we're going to do a Metcons with snatches, but there's a very big difference between I'm trying to lift heavy or I'm trying to go fast and I have PVC in my hand and I'm trying to move better.
Right. So I did want to go back to that, right? Just a couple things, but then it's not about the specific warm-up only in the context of this one class. It's about the specific warm-up in the context of every single day that these people walk into your gym, right? It's a compound. It's the old, like, hey, what is it better to stretch, you know, for an hour once a month or 5 minutes every day? Probably 5 minutes every day. Like, you're going to get more adaptation, better habits, all of that other kind of stuff. So that's really kind of where we're going with that. Now, to your point, it's just like, why is it important inside the context of that 60 minutes?
And back in real time. Back in real time.
We are back from the future into now. This is that scene from Spaceballs.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened to then?
We passed then.
When?
Just now. We're at now, now.
Go back to then.
When?
Now.
Now?
Now.
I can't.
Why?
We missed it.
When do we miss? Now. Just now. When? Just now. Like that. So insert that here. And yes, I am surrounded by assholes.
For every non-80s person, go Google Spaceballs.
So may the Schwartz be with you.
I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
The importance of the specific warm-up is to refine mechanics for the movement, the specific movements you're going to be doing that day, right? If we're doing snatch, I want the practice reps. If we, to go back to the level one, if we think about the 10 general physical skills, the snatch has all of them, but let's think the bottom four: coordination, accuracy, agility, balance. Like, I would probably like to review those before before introducing intensity into the equation, whether it's a snatch or it doesn't have to be something complex, the deadlift, right? Like the deadlift, simple, not easy, does have nuance, should still be taught, all of those things. Like, so greasing the groove, shall we say, in order to get people prepped for intensity, but also just as a general reminder, like people are casually doing fitness. It's important that we don't treat our coaching as casual. Our coaching should be professional and should be, you know, as dialed in as we possibly can make it in order to make sure that people move well for the longest duration possible. That's what we're trying to achieve in the general warm-up, or excuse me, the specific warm-up.
Yeah, and you know, we could dig into the nuance, but oftentimes part of the specific warm-up is that kind of mini WOD or WOD buildup, depending on where you want to classify it. And because you kind of said, like, you know, before rushing to intensity, and that's important too. You and I had, I don't remember if it was on a podcast or not, where you were talking about when you can tell you didn't warm up well in basketball.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny. I was wrestling with someone the other day, and he's in this Olympic wrestler. And he comes out, and I had been there for a bit, and he would just gassed out. And he was like, I did not warm up. And I know that feeling. And part of the specific warm up is getting your members not just physically prepared, but mentally prepared for the workout itself. So
you had also posted something the other day about when I think it was something about, hey, you, just because you're saying do one workout in the class is not suggesting that
they don't move for the hour.
They don't move for the hour. Right.
Right. And that's the, you know, not to go down the strength Metcon rabbit hole, but that is the misconception. It's like, well, if we only do Fran, or we only do a 12-minute AMRAP, like what about the other 48 minutes? Well, this, like, think to your level one, you do a short 3-round for time workout that most flow masters, what do you say the, what do you tell people the range should be for time?
For which workout? Sorry.
For the day one, level one workout.
Like
we tell people we're going to cap at 10, but you should typically.
Oh yes. Sorry. So I was like, wait, I was thinking level two for some reason. There's no fixed workout there. The, so 4 to 6, my range is 7. I'm going to give you a 3-minute window. I don't tell anybody the cap when we do it, but I'm like, hey, if you're in this window, you did this correctly. And when I ran it last weekend, out of 29 people, 2 people were to the right of the timeline by a max of 30 seconds. So that's 7 or 4
under 10 minutes.
Oh yeah, 2.5 minutes under 10 minutes. Yeah.
And everybody that's taken their level one knows the workout we're talking about. But point being, prior to that workout, they've done 20 to 30 minutes of pull-ups and, you know, call it 10 to 12 minutes of thrusters. So 40 minutes of moving, they do this workout at, that's maximum intensity for most, and they're demolished. Like, I mean, people are coughing, like Fran Lung, vomiting, and that's what it's all about. Now, once in a while, do a strength in Metcon, but like Fern just alluded to for the previous 13 minutes, it's all about refining those mechanics and making your newer members feel comfortable. So I wouldn't call them rapid fire, but let's do some short hitters with questions about the specific warm-up. So let's start here. What do coaches typically get wrong with the specific warm-up?
I'm not being a dick when I say this, but not doing them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like once they're in it, it's better than nothing, but it's that they don't do them.
Yeah. That's, again, I'm not throwing stones, because in a lot of instances, there's a mismanagement of time, or there's just not enough time in the timeline to even do one. So it's just fundamentally not done. So that's the first mistake. And I know it sounds like the obvious mistake is do one, but I don't think it's so obvious, to be honest with you.
Well, and to be fair to those coaches, like many of them, you know, if you're a coach, chances are you don't have a say in the programming and your affiliate owner is telling you what to do, right? So it's not to discredit them. It's like, well, I've been given this thing. You're telling me to serve. Like,
right.
All right. So what does a good specific warm-up include?
Well, I think it includes lots of reps, right? Probably includes a progression, and then tons of correction. I mean, those are the three things that I would look at. Like, these are the, and you could do those three things a lot of ways, but lots of reps, either with a progression or without a progression. If it's a complex movement, let's put a progression in there to highlight positions or techniques, and then lots of correction, because nobody moves perfectly. So why don't we get them? Why don't we make the refinements while we can, while they're not under duress, before we put them under intensity? So those are the three things that I look at when I'm looking at a specific warm up, which is lots of reps, probably using a progression of some sort, and tons of correction. Because if you think about where it goes wrong, it's probably missing one or multiple of those three.
Well, let's dig into those. Let's start here. Should the coach be calling every rep?
I don't know. I've not seen it work well when they don't call the reps for a lot of reasons. But mostly when you don't control the reps for people that are already struggling with seeing, much less correcting, if people are not in the same position at the same time, it makes something that is already hard to do infinitely harder.
Well, not just from a seeing perspective, well, also from a seeing perspective, but it will not allow you to get as many corrections per rep without having those static positions.
Correct. Yeah, because now you have contrast. So I've got
people are different points of the movement throughout.
Correct. Yeah. And so anytime somebody does that in like a level two setting, when they're working through that, because that's essentially a simulated specific warm-up drill. Yeah. Really is really what it is. And I will let them go. So I won't immediately jump in and stop them. I'll let them go and then I'll stop them.
You're letting them go to point out what they're doing wrong.
Well, I'm letting them go because I'm going to have them redo it to create the contrast, meaning because okay. I want to show them. So I let them go and we look at the volume of cues, and it's typically like down here. And then I have them call all of the reps and then have them look at something specific because it's very easy. And all of a sudden the cues go up here, like they triple or more in most instances, which is the only objective metric that we could really, really extract from that as like, what would make it better? Be like, well, higher volume of corrections would make it better. All right, guys, I wanna walk you guys through something. Occasionally I will do this in a level two setting, and the purpose of this drill, you can do it with athletes or without athletes, but the whole purpose of this is to work through your process, but not necessarily do any seeing or correcting. So you can do this in a couple different ways. So I've set these up in a circle, but understand you could easily kind of turn these into two lanes if you wanted to. So imagine all of these medicine balls are athletes. So set them up in whatever configuration you're very likely to have for your class, okay? So what we're trying to train people to do here is, what would be the series of things that I would do that would allow me to start to stack the dynamic and the static cueing, and what would that process look like? So I think we've done videos on this before, but I'm a big fan of just working through the process and not doing anything else. And I'm also a big fan of talking through it out loud as you work through it. So what that would look like is, the movement here is kind of irrelevant and you can just kind of work like this. So the process looks like this. You scan the group for static. So let's just say that we're looking for feet. The movement is irrelevant here. I'm gonna scan the group, scan up, I scan back down. Cool, I don't see anything, or maybe I do, doesn't matter. We're not working through that yet. So scan the group. I move to the athlete that is closest to me. I call the rep. So let's just say it's a squat. I say squat. Now everybody's down in an additional static position. And then I scan the group and then I say stand, right? So that would be one rep. And what we're training people to do is work through that scan, call the rep, scan process, doing nothing else other than working through the process. So I don't want them to correct anything. I don't want them to say anything. I just want them to repeat the process over and over and over. So what that would look like is this. So let's just say I'm gonna call a squat on this one. I would do it literally just like this. Scan the group, cool. Go back to this athlete for dynamic and squat. They're now in a static position. And scan and stand, and then I'm gonna move and I'm gonna repeat. I'm gonna scan and squat and scan
and stand, and then I'm going to move. And I'm going to scan the group again, call the rep, and squat. Scan the group again, and stand, have them stand up. And every time I do this in a group, the furthest somebody will make is three people before they break from the routine. And this is the whole purpose of the drill, is to get yourself in the habit of the routine, not making the cues, not doing anything other than training your eyes to move at where you want them, when you want them, to get to see what you want to see. Now, the purpose of this is, so I'm scanning here because this is in a static position because it's static. So let's just say it's a press. I'm checking hands and feet. Where are their feet relative to their hips? And where are their hands relative to their shoulders? What does that front rack look like with regard to elbow slightly forward of the bar? So I'm gonna scan the group for those two things. I'm not gonna do anything. I'm just getting the habit of scanning, okay? Now, when I go to call the rep for a press, push, press, push jerk, I'm gonna watch just this athlete. When I call that rep, they're gonna move to the second static position, which is the end range in the overhead position, and I'm gonna practice scanning the group again. I'm gonna reset them, and then I'm gonna start over. Okay, so the value here is not the correction. And it's, this is gonna sound really weird, it is significantly harder to do that without deviating from the process than most people realize. Most people, probably more than 50% of them, won't even make it one person before they deviate or they're not looking at the right thing. So what I mean by that is, they'll be practicing, and right out of the gate, also be like, all right, the drill's live, I've already explained to them, and they'll go ready, go, and they already forgot to scan. Okay, the second mistake that we'll see is they'll scan the group and then they'll say go, and then they'll leave the athlete that they should be looking at for the dynamic fault or the dynamic portion of the movement. So what we're practicing here is the routine combined with the visual discipline to execute the routine. And the reason this is important is once I can have that process in my brain that's just the way that I do it, I scan the group, I look at this person, I call the rep, I scan the group. Now I can start to do that really fast. And even when done really slow, it's really actually pretty fast because of the way that this is designed. So again, if it was a circle, it wouldn't matter. If I just rearrange these, it's not really gonna matter. Again, circle, squares, you know, squircle, triangle, it's irrelevant. You're still gonna practice the same process, right? I'm gonna scan the group, okay? Looking for whatever I'm looking for. I'm gonna call this rep, ready and go, boom, scan the group. Cool, and reset, and I'm gonna move. Scan again, good, and go. Scan the group, good, reset, and then I'm gonna move again. Scan the group, good, ready, go. Scan the group, good, reset, boom. And then I'm just practicing working through that over and over and over. And once you can do that, and you get in the habit of every single time, it's a scan, call the rep, scan. Now you can start to think about, okay, what would I be looking for over there? And you can pre-populate all your responses. But the important part about this is you do this drill absent of athletes, absent of movement, absent of anything, literally just to work through dry, empty reps of my eyes go here, then they go here. So I go macro, micro, macro, micro, and I just go back and forth between those two until I do it every single time, and now it becomes really easy. And every single time, without a doubt, I do this drill, the second that we add cueing in, the cueing goes up significantly. They start cueing almost everybody in the group, where prior to working through that drill, they cued almost nobody. And it all has to do with working through your process and putting your eyes on athletes in the most advantageous place to see what it is that I'm going to see in that position. So static positions, I can see whatever I want. If I want to see hip extension, I need to look right there at the hip or at the knee, and I can't deviate away from the athlete. And the beauty of that, start with these and just work through your process, okay? You don't need athletes for this, just working through. Lay your PVC pipes out however you want, practice that drill. I promise you, you're gonna see more. So for more tips, you guys keep coming back. We can't wait to see more. If you got questions, let us know.
So how many reps is too many reps?
I don't think there's a number there. Here's what I think. There too many reps is if there's, I would go with two metrics, one of which is a little bit more objective. The other one is subjective. So we'll go with the objective one first. Too many reps is, I don't know, call it 3 to 5 reps with no correction. Meaning like these are just empty reps. Now nothing is actually, nothing is being improved.
When you're not actually coaching.
Yeah. So an empty rep means we call a rep and then there is no corrective action given to anybody. There was no cue given behind the rep. So squat, stand, squat, stand, squat, stand, squat, stand. And you just go. And I'm like, all right, well, these are now useless. We've done nothing with these reps in order to improve people's movement. The other one would be too many would be if I am wearing out my athletes or making it not, or they're aggravated now. And that, so that could be too many reps, or it could be lack of understanding about static positions, or it could just be, you know, you're doing a one-on-one session with somebody by accident, you know, while the rest of the group is moving and you're not paying attention. So.
Yeah. And I would throw one last thing. Like what, well, I guess we're on the same page there, you know, just making sure everyone's, the coach included, moving forward and engaged. Is the goal perfect movement or better movement?
Better.
Yeah, too many. You know, that's where it goes wrong. When a coach gets stuck on one person and they're like, "Oh, I'm," oftentimes it's because like I'm trying to fix this nuanced thing, or also they just need a lot of help and that's not the time and place. Like, get them a little bit better. Like, that's what I tell, you know, a level two, the same thing. Like, you have 7 minutes. The goal is not to make them perfect. The goal is to see some improvement in everyone. And if you finish in 3 minutes, what you're essentially saying is this is as good as I can get people.
Yeah. So the goal is better. And, you know, this next piece comes with time, meaning experience. You have to know what you're going to get, know what you're not going to get. So the goal is better. And then sometimes I will tell a coach, you're not going to get any more out of that.
Yeah, that was it.
Meaning either you fundamentally can't because that athlete's just not capable of it, or I don't know how else to say this, like, or you're not good enough to get the additional 5 to 10% from that athlete because you don't have either your eyes are not good enough, or your teaching is not concise enough, or your cues are not fast enough in order to get the change that you want in any sort of reasonable time. And that's a real thing, right? Like that time starts to shrink up as you get better and better and better. We're like, hey, it used to take me 5 minutes to change this, and now it takes me 30 seconds to fix it because I've worked through those over time. So in a lot of those instances, I said, hey, you got better movement, just move on.
Keep going. That's a hard concept though. Like,
right.
Oh, I'm good enough right here. This is where I need to be.
Well, I think the way to frame that is you asked them for something. They gave it to you. Okay. Move on. Right? Be like, simple, be like, hey, can you give me $1? And you're like, yeah, I'll give you $1. And be like, can you give me $2? And I'm like, now there's friction, right? You're like, I just gave you $1, dude. Like, chill out. Now you're being greedy. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't be relentless, right? So this is where the art comes in about like how far can you push. And a lot of that, in at least in my experience from watching, I don't know, thousands of the coaches do it at this point, that's in delivery and speed, right? You ask them for something, they gave it to you. Do you make the quick determination that I can quickly try to get something else and then move on? If yes, then I'm like, then double down, get it and move on. You know,
just reading your athlete though too.
Correct.
Often in the specific warm-up, it's opportunity to discuss scaling. So let's talk two things. Scaling, should you be demoing every single scaling option?
In my mind, yes, I think you should demo everything. I think the when and how you do that becomes a little bit nuanced.
Yeah, and also when we say every single scaling option, is it like every single scaling option known to man, or is it every single scaling option you're presenting today, right? Because that's a mistake I think coaches make. Like, hey, we're doing muscle ups. Here's, pick your choice of a million options, or do the one you do, when in reality it should be, well, what is closest to the stimulus of this workout? If it's 30 muscle ups for a time, we might go 30 slow transitions. But if it's 3 muscle ups in a 18 minute AMRAP round after round, they got to be a little faster.
Right. So yeah, I agree.
And within that, Talk about your bus stop protocol.
So, I don't know if I made this up.
I'm giving you credit for it.
I do know that there is a YouTube video that I made on this probably 8 years ago. And it doesn't matter. Use it. The point is this. When I was working through that process, I was trying to think about what would be the most efficient means of teaching something complex, but building in the scaling options in a way that I wouldn't have to do a ton of backtracking. Meaning, like, I teach the movement, I'm like, okay, we'll use muscle up, for example. So you say you teach the muscle up, we're going to do this and muscle ups. I'm like, okay, now we're, for anybody that is still working a muscle up or doesn't have one, now I'm going to teach you all the other things. But it felt kind of backwards to me. So the bus stop concept is I would build in all of the scaling options that would also double as the specific warm-up for the movement. And I would essentially be like dropping people off at each stage. Be like, hey, if this is what you think you're gonna do for the workout, you're gonna stay right here. And then we're all gonna progress. And maybe they work on some different variation further down the line, or maybe they stay there and they continue working. But it was just a more logical way for me to create a linear path in the context of a group setting and a complex movement with a tight lesson plan.
Yeah, I think, and it sets the members up for success when it comes to the workout, because there you go, here are your options for scaling.
And the other way to think about it is just make a progression for whatever that movement is, that inside of the progression are all of the scaling options for the workout, and then take the entire class through that scaling progression and let everybody know, be like, this is option one. This is option two, this is option three.
Stay here if you want to keep working on it.
Right.
So we often talk about, when you're cueing, using names, a mistake coaches make is, you know, the good grenades. Good, perfect, etc.
Nice.
Nice. What? Rather than talking about why that's ineffective, because I think it's quite obvious, how do you go about improving a coach when they're doing that?
If I was working for a coach, I would simply ask a question. Who are you talking to? Because in the general cues that they're giving, they're always talking to somebody. It's just not obvious, right? So they're like, all right, guys, heels down, you know, all right, get those heels down. And I'm like, hey, who are you talking to? And they're like, well, Jay, but I didn't want to single him out. And I'm like, well, he's the only one squatting with his toes 4 inches off of, or his heels 4 inches off the floor. Just say his name. And I always joke, and I'm like, if you use a general cue, nobody assumes you're talking to them. Even the person who's moving.
Unless it's good, then you're like, oh, I'm good.
Right. But even then, everybody thinks they're moving well. Right. So I'll even ask that question. I'm like, who thinks that the coach is talking to them? And I'm like, nobody will raise their hand. I'm like, this is the point. But if I say, hey, Jay, drive those heels down, immediately everybody else reacts to that. Right, because they're like, oh, well, if he's got his heels down, then that means I'm next. So I will just do it now. And people are like, well, I don't want to single them out. And I'm like, well, that's a different discussion about what is your distribution of cues across the group. And if you're getting everybody, then nobody feels singled out. And tone, right? Don't be a jerk, right? Like, how you say something matters.
We touched on this a little bit, but can you think of any additional benefits of a test run of at the end of the specific warm-up? And what do you, I call it a WOD buildup. Do you have a name that you use?
We just call it a test round.
Well, I mean, I'll give one thing. For some workouts, it's important to just kind of see the flow of movement, right? Like, you might have pull-ups, barbells, and then not realize, oh, Sally's going to the back of the pull-up rig and Johnny's coming forward. Let's move the bars. So, you know, other than just improving the actual warm-up, like we discussed, you have that. It's an opportunity to reassess weight, right? Like you do at the day one workout out of a level one. Like, when somebody picks up a bar and struggles with five thrusters at 95, you're like, you know, how are 45 about to go?
Yeah, so there's three things. One, three obvious things, I think. There's probably more. that one, which is what you just laid out, is like, have I unknowingly created any logistical log jams here? Like, I just didn't think this or that bar shouldn't be over there. You'll figure that out as you do this. The second one is, absent of anything other than just how long does it take them to get that test round done? And a test round doesn't mean a full test, mean a full round, by the way. So that, no. There's a, yeah, it's some
9-6-3.
Yeah. I usually go with like, what's like 30 to 40%, maybe 50% of a round. Right.
Oh, that low. So for like for Fran, you might go like 5-3-1.
I might even just go like 7-7.
One time.
Like 7-7. I need 7 thrusters, 7 pull-ups. Because what I'm looking for in that instance is like the main objective I'm looking at is like, how long does that take them? Right. It's at which point, if they're outside of the window that I was anticipating, then I'll hone in on something else, which is that load too heavy? Is the volume on those pull-ups too high? Do we need to make any of those changes? So doing the test round, and if you're pretty dialed in with your programming or pretty tuned in to your programming, you should know about how long a round should take, at which point you should know about how long a half round should take roughly. Right. So like we know that for Fran is 21-21, that's a third of a round. We know that the first round should take something to the tune of a minute, maybe a little bit, you know, a minute and a half, depending on who we're talking about. Right. So that means if I'm going to do 7-7, I'm like, everybody should be 30 seconds, right? It should be 7 thrusters, 7 pull-ups in 30 seconds. So if somebody comes in at 45 seconds, I already know what's going to happen because that was 1/3 of the first round.
Yeah. You extrapolate that over 3 rounds and more reps, they're going to be. Right.
So then the question is why? Is it the thruster's too heavy, or is the thruster fine? And they had to break the 7 pull-ups into 3-3-1, at which point I'm like, okay, let's rethink the pull-up volume here. But time is always what I'm looking for, because that immediately correlates to overall stimulus. And are they going to be inside the stimulus that we've highlighted or outside the stimulus that we highlighted?
All right. So let's talk one last thing. If doing a strength and Metcon or vice versa, is it better to go through everything up front and then work through each piece, or do a specific warm up for just A, then perform A of the workout, specific warm up for B, and then B? Now, I think the challenge here is, do you actually have the time to do that? But what do you think? And then also, you know, as a programming discussion where, hey, we're back squatting, then we're doing, snatches and pull-ups, it's like, well, maybe the second part of the workout should make a little more sense to part A.
I think this is an it depends question, and a lot of it has to do with the things you just highlighted there. You know, if it's well designed, you could probably cover most of it on the front end, because we would ideally like to see some redundancy across both of those workouts, right? So if it's a heavy day into a Metcon, whatever the weightlifting component would be found in both. So I don't need to review that. And all I'm left with is whatever the additional movement is, which may require little to no warm up. If it's cardio or box jump. Now, if it's more complex and we need to cover a handstand push up, well then I would need to cover that, or I would want to cover that before going into that. Trying to make sure that we don't lose, that prep on the barbell, but it's highly unlikely because you probably went just pretty heavy. So even if you didn't touch the barbell for 7 to 10 minutes after that, and you're coming back down to well below 50% of what you were just working at, you're going to be fine. And it's not like you weren't moving. You were just doing something else.
Well, if you liked hearing about the specific warm-up, we got something for you. Check out the Knowledge. Check out the Knowledge Pro. In the Knowledge Pro, you'll actually get feedback on your coaching in that specific warm-up from some of the best in the business, 10 plus years on seminar staff. So if you're struggling with your ability to coach, if you're not getting the feedback you need, check out the Knowledge. Check out the Knowledge Pro. Free trial. And we guarantee it'll make you a better coach.
Guarantee, huh?
That's what Pat said. Pat Barber said he guaranteed it or he will come to your house.
Ooh.
And personally
build you. He will personally build you one of those dome thingies.
He'll build you a dome. He'll make you a salad, a sandwich, and make you a better coach. All right. But seriously, coaches, the Knowledge Pro, the knowledge is one of a kind. It's making thousands of coaches better every single day, and you can be next. All right. Great chat about the specific warm-up, Fern.
Until next time.
Thanks for checking out this episode of the Best Hour of Their Day podcast. We appreciate you listening and choosing to have us help you in your passion for coaching and affiliate ownership. You can find more episodes just like this on all podcast platforms. If you're interested in learning more, you can reach out to us on any social media platforms, or you can visit www.besthouroftheirday.com to book a call. If you found this episode helpful for you, please share it so that we can help other coaches and affiliate owners to help build a bigger and stronger CrossFit community. Thanks for listening.